just want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to get on a road to recovery.
Good morning, good morning. You're listening to Recovery Radio this morning down in the beautiful, I want to say Harpers Ferry, but John is going to look at me if I say, we're down in beautiful Bolivar.
Bolivar, named after Simon Bolivar, the liberator of some part of Latin America.
Oh, right, right. Liberation is a good word. I like
that. Well, I think they named Bolivia after him, too.
Oh, okay. Bolivia. That's a good bit of history there, John.
Well, but I don't remember if he was really from Bolivia. I'm sorry. I don't remember.
That's all right. It's real, still good information, man. Hey, how about the Thailand?
Marvelous, you know, huh?
Prayed, yeah, and it worked out, man.
All those workouts they make them seals go through, I guess.
Yeah,
it's,
it pays off.
I guess it paid off when you got to have them.
Yeah. Oh, man, I love stories like that.
It was like
that,
a quarter mile of it completely underwater, right? I mean,
imagine,
like,
man.
Wow.
Just imagine, man.
And they lost one man, didn't they,
they did.
The process?
Yeah. Yeah,
how'd they get? I'm still trying to wonder how they got in that spot, but it's a.
Yeah, that's going to come out. That'll probably be part of the next series that they do on that. It was just amazing, but I heard early on that the Scoutmaster is going to have to answer some questions.
Well, I mean, once he got caught, he certainly led their ability to survive.
He put it to the test.
Yeah, he did.
So, they were a soccer team, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh, man, I wonder who these guys.
Well, this will probably turn out to be one of those situations where, you know, there was supposed to be a sign on the road saying, you know, dead end, don't take this.
Yeah,
but nobody. They cut the taxes, and so nobody wanted to.
Man.
Nobody put it up, and
but they're all alive. Man.
But that is a kind of a human and a otherwise miracle, because I guess they were subject to the what was going to happen to the tides, right? And and the rising water and the monsoon.
The monsoon.
Yeah, rain, a lot of rain.
Held back the monsoon,
like we were having here a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, we were having it. I experienced monsoon season when I was in Vietnam, and so the whole time that they were airing this story about Thailand, I started having these little jittery moments about my time in the monsoon rains, and that rain, and it's it makes the mud like our snow. So so when you go outside and tromping through the monsoon season, you pick up so much mud, and you can get stuck in the mud, where you will need help getting out of the mud. That's how the monsoon was.
Right.
Yeah, and so, I mean, if you've never experienced a real monsoon,
don't go to Vietnam.
Go to Vietnam. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's okay. Nam is okay now, I guess. You know, the war is all of that's over. But
I guess. What was that about?
I don't know. You know, I'm still trying to figure that one out, John. But thank God I'm here. I'm on Recovery Radio.
Thank God you made it through that.
Yeah, man.
Did you do one tour or two?
I did one tour. Yeah,
okay.
That was just enough for me. Actually, they kicked me out of Vietnam, the military. They made me go home. I didn't want to go home because I had gone crazy.
I
was smoking
crazy.
We was Acapulco Gold and every narcotic, and this was like 10 times the strength of a lot of the stuff that they have here in this country. Oh, however, it's getting more and more powerful.
Oh my God!
We speak with the fentanyl and so.
Well, I think even without that.
Yeah,
I mean the scientifically engineered marijuana.
So, a lot of conversation that needs to be had, but not only conversation. We need to have action with it to go along with the conversation, and so that's why here on Recovery Radio, you know, I like to, just connect myself, get into the community, and find out what the temperature is about a certain subject, and to be a help.
What would happen if this Garrett, in your view, what would happen if there was a guaranteed income?
If there was a guaranteed income, what would happen? I believe that people would make much better decisions.
Most would. I mean, yeah, I mean, someone's going to point to some who might not. But I mean, on the other hand, on the average, I mean, you think it would be an improvement, and the more people would feel like they had the freedom to choose something different.
Yeah, that's, and when you put it that way, that's what needs to happen. So I see where you're going with that, and I think that's a very valid point and a good conversation. I think that people would be doing much, much better socially, economically, emotionally.
Right.
You know, you just remove some of the barriers, and I think one of the biggest barriers is the economics that we are somehow afraid to look at. Or, you know, we have hoarded so much money, some of us. And you know, when we see our brother down, you know, we don't want to let go of that.
Let me ask another question. I mean, how many MS-13 members have you run into in Martinsburg?
From what I hear of them, I have not run across any. So I think we ought to have a parade.
What?
That's if it's true about the guys. I mean, I haven't run across any. I don't say that they're not here.
Yeah.
I just haven't come in contact. What about you? Have you come?
I haven't seen one yet.
Me either.
But maybe they're not wearing maybe I don't recognize the T-shirt or something. I don't know. But or the tattoo
they're all
or whatever.
Walking around with a big.
I got a big sign. MS-13.
You
know. No, I'm MS-13 and a half.
You know, they kind of create the boogeyman. You know, it's like everything else, it comes in cycles, and so that, you know, 2 years from now there's going to be another gang.
I mean, my question really is, exactly. Is there an immigration problem or is there a race problem?
I think there's a race problem, big race problem. There has always been a race problem, and you know, but I think it's being diminished as we speak. It's taken a while. It probably won't happen in my or your lifetime. But maybe our great grands and so forth and so on. You know, I think James Brown said we would rather die something than to, no, we would rather live on our something than to die on our knees. And
sure.
He was talking about, you know, people being enslaved and, you know, conditioned to be a certain way. I think it's economic starvation going on in this country, and it's systematic. You know, they starve a portion of the people. And I believe that we're getting so close to pulling the covers off of the money and the wealth and the history in this country about everything, all the social ills that take place. And that, you know, people are running scared. The people with money, I would say, about what's going to happen. Even though I think our president has calmed the fears of some of the people who are named in that category of either profiteering or racist. He's calming the fears of a lot of people who are pushing opioids.
That's not a good sign.
It's not a good sign at
all. He ought to be feeling a little bit of the backlash here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's coming.
I hope so.
Like we talked about Sam Cooke, a change is going to come. But, you know, this, like Martin Luther King says, the debilitating drug of gradualism, you know.
I'm afraid it's not going to be just a change, but a reckoning.
A reckoning. Oh, my goodness. That's a strong word, John. A reckoning. <That's>, that sounds like one of Stephen King's.
Sounds like a little bit of karma coming, floating over the horizon,
so.
You know. But
I believe so. Yeah. You know, we have a pretty interesting topic this morning, John, that I'll touch on. So somebody sent me, Debbie Hill Gray. She says, I'm feeling super sick. Oh, yeah, we're going to have a caller, young man that's here in from Washington, D.C., and he helps to establish Oxford houses. Are you familiar with that, the Oxford House? We have several.
I do. Yeah, we had somebody a couple years ago on the program from Oxford House. He was talking about the way they handle things and what it's like living in Oxford House.
I've been kind of rubbing elbows with some of the folk from the Oxford Houses here of late, and it's a pretty interesting concept that they have. And I'm finding in the recovery community that there is even lots of disagreements about sobriety. Something is, you know, as necessary as sobriety. Some believe that total abstinence, which is what the model of the Oxford House, they operate under that. I don't think they receive people who are on the medically assisted treatment as of yet. But we're going to find out in a minute, and my call is supposed to be...
When you say total abstinence, that's what you mean, right? No, like Suboxone or Methadone?
Okay. None of that. Yeah, none of that. You know, but they provide one of the basic essentials, and that's a roof over your head, you know.
And they have a group counseling kind of thing.
Yeah, they do.
I don't know whether it works or not, but...
So we're gonna explore into that, because this young man... by the way, that song that we started off with this morning, John, was written by a gentleman who is a resident, or was a resident, of one of the Oxford houses in Florida, I believe it was. And he wrote that song. His name is Jay Harden. So I figured I would feature that. And they have it on YouTube as the Oxford House anthem.
You know, wow.
Yeah. So we take a minute to listen to that whenever you get a chance, or whoever, can listen to it and figure out what people are thinking when they, you know, write music, or what kind of position they're in right now, what their life is like. And it sounds like he's very, very grateful. But I was just really ecstatic very early this morning about the Thailand, because I've been keeping a close eye on that.
Yeah. And, it's a gift that they survived.
Yeah, man, yes. That they survived and they came out. And so, you know, that gives us something to at least celebrate in this country.
Now, I know everybody across the country, okay, and rightly so, because there was a conspiracy that involved, you know, the breaking of the waves a little bit there. But, you know, I before everyone starts thanking God first for this miracle, for this saving of the kids, I mean, I would like to remind you of the parable of the farmer.
Yeah, go ahead.
And get your reaction to this, maybe.
Go ahead.
You know, the farmer had acquired a piece of property in this community and was working 7 days a week. Keeping the farm, getting the farm together and trying to get it productive. And the local priest took note of this. And early on a Sunday morning, he headed out to, well, we'll just call him Jacob, Jacob's farm, okay?
Okay.
And there was Jacob early on a Sunday morning already out there, you know, walking behind his mule and plowing away. So the preacher came up to him and said, "Jacob, I see that he looks around at the looking pretty good farm here now." And he says, "I see that you and the Lord have done right well by this farm." You and the Lord have done right well by this farm. And Jacob says, "That is so true, Pastor. However, you should have seen it before I got here, and the Lord had it all to himself." He had a different farm in mind.
Yeah, right. That's really good.
I want to thank the Seal Numbers and God for conspiring there to on the Thailand kids soccer team.
Yeah, so sad about the one guy that lost his life. But it just goes to show you, you know, when times need, that people will step up and sacrifice everything for you. You just have to be willing to do your part. Yeah, so this morning on Recovery Radio, we're talking about the Oxford Houses and how that came about. And so, you know, and they have a rich history. It says the Oxford House is a concept in recovery from drug and alcohol addiction. In its simplest form, an Oxford House describes a democratically run, self-supporting, and drug-free home. Now, I've been involved in something called MOVED with some Martinsburg associates of mine and Dr. Ed Grove. And we tried that model in something, the MOVE House. And it didn't pan out too well. So I'm interested in the Oxford House model, because they've been around a long time and it seems to be working. But my question, in a lot of these instances, you know, working for whom and working for what? Because after rehab, then what? And I noticed, I want to ask this young man when he comes on this morning, what are some of the challenges? Because he hails from Washington, D.C., where they run Oxford Houses. And I think that it's a little different in Washington, especially. My thing is with the public transportation here. So you get a person in the Oxford House, and they're paying their rent, and they got a job, but there's no transportation to speak of in terms of getting to where you need to be in a hurry, in a fast way, because the rest of the world is driving right by you. And, you know, and I have no problem with public transportation if it's for real public transportation. And I know that those people over at the Eastern Panhandle Transit Authority are working tirelessly to create, you know, one of the ways that we can get around that barrier of transportation for people. Elaine Bartleson and Doug over there at the bus company, I know they're coming up with different ways to add buses and everything, but the Oxford Houses, you know, that's a really good concept, and I'm interested. Sounds like we have our caller coming on right now. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, James.
Hi. Good morning. How are you? Welcome to Recovery Radio. It's Donzel, right? Hey, how you doing?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Good, good, good. I was just sitting here reading your bio and on your Facebook page, and got some pretty interesting posts up here. I just played the theme song. I'm going to get you. You'll hear it once we post the show online. But I looked it up, and one of the anthems for the Oxford House, the young man that wrote a song, I'm sure you heard it, and it's on YouTube. They call it the the Oxford House Anthem. And I think it was one of the houses down in I'm not sure, I thought it was Florida, but anyway, Donzel, welcome to Recovery Radio. Let's get started, man. Tell us about you, first of all, and how long have you been here in West Virginia?
Well, you know what? I'm new to West Virginia, actually. Mm-hmm. I just got here, but I really do plan on, planting some roots down here in West Virginia. I'll be moving into an Oxford House in a couple of weeks, and I'm already working as a recovery coach for a nonprofit organization called the Youth Advocacy Program.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm currently residing in Hagerstown at the moment, but I'm definitely looking forward to working with the recovery community here in Martinsburg, West Virginia, because as you know, or some of you may know, but just in case you haven't heard, that recovery is a universal language.
Yes.
And just because I wasn't born here or raised here, you know, we definitely speak the same language, have the same lingo, and, you know, it's the same recovery process, so.
Yeah, that is good. You know, I'm reading here, you got a rich history here, man. I think you're going to do well here in Martinsburg, you know, in this battle. You got the ER recovery coach at MedStar Harbor. Tell me what that was like for you. Was it a school?
You know, that was very interesting. I worked there for a little while. What we did was when we did something called ESPERT there, which is abbreviation for screening, brief mm-hmm. intervention, and mm-hmm. referral to treatment.
Yes.
If you were to go into the ER, and regardless of what you're there for, we just ask certain questions during the medical examination, and depending on your answers, you'll get a brief intervention from a recovery coach like myself,
mm-hmm.
and that brief intervention will determine if you need a referral to treatment or, you know, because some people have already been in recovery before, and it may have been their first time, or they may need detox. So that's what the intervention is for, to just determine the level of treatment someone may need, or, you know, fortunately, to see if anyone's ready for treatment at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I notice here you got Donzel Gunn, Living Witness. Tell me a little bit about that, Living Witness.
Well, yes, I'm definitely a living witness to the spiritual nature of the world. You know, I definitely believe there is something else going on outside of what we can see and feel. And just as a brief example, you know, I could not have but I guessed or picked my recovery process starting. You know, if you'd have told me maybe 14 to 15 years ago that I'd be working for a nonprofit organization and carrying the recovery message to people all over the world or people in different communities, you know, there's no way that I could have planned that. And I'm definitely a living witness to things like that that are definitely going on. And just my personal story and just examples of other stories from, you know, world conventions and, you know, regular annual conventions on the state level or region level that, you know, other people are benefiting, you know, from that spiritual awareness as well.
Okay. So one of the conventions, I see you guys got a convention coming up pretty shortly, right? Will you be part of that?
Yes, I believe it's the Almost Heaven area has a convention that's going to be down in Front Royal, Virginia. Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, maybe the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of August. I'm not really sure, but I know within the next month.
So that's the Almost Heaven Convention. That's West Virginia, because excuse me, because
West Virginia, and they have some meetings.
Almost
in,
Heaven.
Hagerstown that are a part of that area as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's pretty good. So you studied human services at Community College of Baltimore. So you have a long history in recovery. Are you in recovery yourself?
Yes, sir. I've been in recovery as far as abstinence from the drug for a continuous time of 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had 12 years out of the past 14. I had a couple of relapses along the way.
Okay. And what do you think that was due to? Just enlighten me a little bit, because I got some people that keeps doing the same thing.
I understand. Well, you know, sometimes responding to the environment, a drug may seem like a good idea, and if I don't resort back to what I know to be true, which is I can always reach out and ask someone else for help, you know, then the picking up the drug will always be an option.
Mm-hmm.
But I would never give someone a recipe for relapse besides choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can go through anything clean, you know, so
right.
The only thing I can say is, you know, during that time, I was probably responding to the environment in a negative way, and I just decided to use a drug to cope.
Mm-hmm.
At that time. But there is no, in my opinion, in my experience, let me say my experience, because the opinion may have a different outlook. My experience, there is no reason for relapse besides choice.
Besides choice. That's my opinion as well. And but some of the choices, do you think they're physical, emotional, psychological? You said you responded to your environment. And
right, an emotional response. Mm-hmm. You know, because the first thing is anger. You know, that's what I resort to. Mm-hmm. Anger or frustration. And then I get uncomfortable. And, you know, my source of comfort, you know, comes from a bottle or a pill. And even when I'm not using, sometimes I seek comfort in other things, like maybe ice cream, shopping. You know, I have a heavy shoe fetish. Mm-hmm. I need to have a pair of shoes. If I can buy a pair of shoes with every paycheck, I'll be satisfied.
You and me too, brother.
Kind of outside my
job. They say new shoes cure the blues.
Yeah.
and that works for me. That works for me right there. And so your journey is pretty interesting, and you're here in Martinsburg. You're getting ready to open up the Oxford House in Berkeley County?
Yes, I'm going to be part of the first wave of recovering people within inside the Oxford House.
Mm-hmm.
Oxford House is a self-run house, mm-hmm. self-run homes. So the first people that come in, they screen the next people that come in and so forth and so forth. And we pay equal share, mm-hmm. of the rent and expenses. And so I'll just be one of the first six.
Yeah, and on average for this community, what do you think the rent and expenses will be for this particular house?
Between $110 and $130 a week. And the reason why is that range is because you could have a house that's bigger than six people, and if you're fortunate enough to be in a nicer home, or depending on your location across the United States, your expenses may be more than a person's, another person in another state's, but it will be an equal share. So whatever the actual mortgage is, it will be divided by how many people are inside the home.
Yeah, and so what are some of the downsides of the operating code? Because I guess you're operating under an honor system. Would that be correct?
Yes. And in regard to the honor system, yes. You know, we kind of police ourselves and police each other. So, you know, once you come in, you do sign a contract saying that, you know, if your behavior is erratic or if we think you're using or something like that, we do... We do urine tests, or if we know that you are definitely using, we have to prove it, of course. You can't just think that you are.
That's correct.
But a person has, I want to say, at least maybe an hour or two, depending on the region, to vacate the home, and then they have like 30 days to come back and get their things. So I guess that is the downside if someone relapses, that it's like a zero tolerance, per se. You know, you can't come back if you... You know, depending on the circumstances, if you admitted it to us and then, you know, we try to get you help for treatment and then you come back after 30 days. But depending on, you know, if a person tries to, you know, get away with it, it's definitely zero tolerance. And that protects the home. You know, it's not to shun the person away from us. It's to kind of protect us from the disease. Because, you know, disease is, you know, doesn't have any face.
Hold on, Donzel. We got another caller. Hey, caller, how are you? Hello?
Hi, James. It's Debbie. How are you?
Hi, Debbie. How are you? I have another call on the line with you. So you're going to be joining the conversation. Debbie, welcome aboard to Recovery Radio. We have Brother Denzel. Oh, I said Donzel. Wow, I was getting ready to give it to you, Donzel. I'm going to give you Denzel. So we have Debbie. So we're both advocating for the same thing. And we were talking, Debbie, about the Oxford houses. Can you, Debbie, tell us who you are and why you're calling this morning? Of course, because I asked you to. But talk to us about what it is that you're doing in the community.
So basically, it started out just helping anyone that called that had addiction or mental health alone. It doesn't matter, but most addiction stems from some underlying childhood trauma or mental health. But I felt the need to get into the jail system, to the correctional system, because I was seeing so many people going to prison for addiction possession charges and addiction-related charges where they're not going to get the help that they need. So I started, I set up a meeting with the jail administrator and his staff and the counselors, and they were excited to work with me because they're very overwhelmed as also trying to provide resources to individuals. So now I've kind of developed a system where attorneys just refer clients to me that they feel are eligible for long-term treatment, typically, over going, usually there's a lot of revocations. Most people have already been to prison or in jail, so they're revoked for dirty urines or more charges. So I work with the attorneys, the probation officers. I've met with prosecutors and sat on the stand with several circuit court judges in three counties and the federal court as well to get them treatment, the treatment that they need, over going into prison where they're not going to really get, they do have an RSAP program, but they're not going to get the treatment that they need.
Okay, so Debbie,
so that's kind of my heart.
Yeah. So Donzel, Debbie, Donzel is one of the administrators at the for the Oxford houses here in Berkeley and Jefferson County, and I'm really happy that I got a chance to have you both on the phone so that we can kind of bridge some gaps. Donzel, this question is for you. Are you familiar, or how does the Oxford houses interact with the courts and in the probation and jail system right now? You have any idea?
Our definite referral process comes from any and everywhere. And most people reach out to us on their own. But if there's like a referral agency, like for example, if there was someone coming home or know that they're on their way home and there's a person at a resource center that knows that the person is coming home and trying to bridge a gap, you know, instead of them being homeless when they come home, we do application processes and interviews and referrals when someone is still in an institution or a jail.
Mm. Okay. So, Debbie, are you familiar with Oxford Houses?
I actually already work with them. I work with Maria Hampton.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I work with Hunter Trivett. I actually have a client currently incarcerated in Martinsburg who is going to be released to the Oxford because her case is federal. She had to stay in the Northern District, so we're working on getting her in. But my boss also donated, like, I think $5,000 last summer to the Oxford Houses. So, yes, I work with them quite a bit.
Well, this is wonderful. This is nowhere as near as wonderful for me as the Thailand situation where the young guys got rescued and just, oh man, that just blessed me today. So I really appreciate you guys being on. And I really don't believe in happenstance. I don't know about you all, but I think everything happens for a really good reason. Yeah. Go ahead, Debbie.
Absolutely. No, I was going to say absolutely. I never thought I'd be doing what I'm doing, but my son's been struggling with addiction for 15 years, mostly clean, but a lot of relapse. And I never expected to be doing this, but I know it's God's work.
Yeah.
I truly believe that.
Yeah. You want to add something to that, Donzel, before I kick out my next statement? I think this is going to floor both of you guys because I'm sure you're on board with it. So how do you feel, Donzel, about what Debbie just said about, you know, getting clients out of jail and meeting them where they are and then sticking with them through the process? Now, how does the Oxford House work in that regard?
Well, that's my experience. I have been in the system myself, and I definitely had to, you know, find things to find a recovery living or some type of sober living when I came home because I didn't have anywhere else to go. So that has been my experience, and I know it's vital, and it was vital in my recovery, because if I had to go back to the same uncomfortable living situation or unhealthy living situation, I would have just ended up resorting back to the drug. And I'm a graduate of the Howard County Drug Court program, so I do know that that's a pretty extensive program, but that is one of the programs that have been, I think, has been working for people across the nation as far as treatment as opposed to jail time.
Okay.
That's excellent. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. And Debbie, I'm definitely looking forward to working with you because I work with Maria as well, and she was the one who interviewed me to come into the new Oxford House that we're opening, or that she's opening next week, I believe.
Yeah.
If you're interested in volunteering, we're looking for volunteers because it's kind of hard to keep up with the amount of inmates I'm working with currently.
Well, that is a blessing.
Okay.
So here's the next part of this. After rehab, then what? Let's talk a little bit about that. You take off first, Donzel. What is your take on that? After rehab, then what? After you get in the Oxford House, rehab, then what?
Well, after rehab, and then the person gets into an Oxford House?
Yeah, well, I mean, what do you do? What do you do in the community once you're not in the structured environment? And I understand that.
Well, after that, that's when it's up to the recovery community to support the individual, as well as the individual kind of really reaching out to the recovery community. And then we do what's called maintenance after that. You know, mm-hmm. It's either not necessarily everybody has to go to meetings, but depending on where you live, it is kind of a requirement for the home. But whatever a person's, recovery maintenance model is, you know, mm-hmm. they have to, or that is what the next step is. If it's church, if it's therapy, if it's intensive outpatient, meditation. You know, there's definitely a lot of modalities for recovery, so I don't want to promote one single one, but that's definitely what's next for the person. Then, of course, you know, you have the social and economical thing that a person has to do, find a job, and then, you know, work from there, because we do still have to work and pay our way, you know, even if we're living in a recovery home or living with anyone.
Yeah.
You know, there has to be some type of rent and income. And that also, I believe, promotes independence and healthy living as well. So, and any resources that a person may need or have, you know, we definitely have them, but we can't do it for them.
Right.
You know, we point them in the right direction, give them a nice outline that has been working for millions of people, and then it's up to them to follow their path.
Mm-hmm. And you, Debbie, how do you feel about that after rehab? Then what's your plan?
So one thing we are starting, our company will be rolling out probably September. What we do know is that the individual goes and gets their help that they need and learns their tools to go forward in life. But the family unit is still left behind without any tools, no education, maybe has, typically actually has their own mental health underlying issues or trauma that they haven't dealt with. So we're bringing a regulated, accredited HIPAA telemedicine platform to family members. So while their loved one is in treatment, we're going to be offering them master's level counseling from the privacy of their home, from a phone, a laptop, their whatever electronic device. Because just as Denzel said, if the individual comes home to an unhealthy situation, it causes relapse most of the time. So we need to start looking at the family. This disease is a family disease. We need to look at the family unit. But also, interestingly enough, yesterday morning I read an article about a 5-year improvement plan for individuals struggling with addiction. They already do this with the doctors and attorneys who are struggling with addiction.
Right.
They put on a 5-year plan where they're monitored over those 5 years. And I feel like it's very important for people who are coming out of rehab. Just as Denzel said, you have got to continue therapy or meetings. I mean, whatever it is that works for each individual, but somebody needs to be following up with them. Our community needs to be providing more resources, and we need to be involved over at least several years.
Yeah,
because it's that disease doesn't end when they walk out of rehab.
It does not. It absolutely does not.
Absolutely.
Well, this has been amazing stuff going on here. So, Denzel, you heard my good friend Debbie call you Denzel twice, right?
Oh yeah.
It's something about that name. People won't say, "Well, you my know, name is not you Denzel."
Know, I get it so often. I tell people that Denzel Washington has the financial wealth, and I have the spiritual wealth, and sometimes we borrow from each other.
Yeah, we borrow from each other.
So now, did I pronounce your wrong incorrectly? Your name?
Oh, it's Donzel with an O.
D-O-N, yeah.
I'm so sorry.
But it's fine. That's, I think he enjoyed that. That's what's very, it's something about Denzel that kind of gets people, relax people. Yeah.
Hey,
so you guys go ahead on just one at a time, you know, just don't cut each other off, and just share some information with my listening audience about what it is, how you're going to collaborate, because I don't believe that this meeting is, you know, going to be put by the wayside between the two resources.
No, I think that we need both. I think that we need all resources. I think that we have a lot of community resources, different groups doing different things. But I think that the key factor in this is that we all come together to help one another. Because if we are out here trying to do it on our own, you know, at the end of the day, it's about helping the individuals. That's it. That's the only thing it's about. So the more resources we have, and the more people who are willing to actually work together to help one another, the better successes we're going to have.
And that is always the case. And how do you feel about it, Donzel? Give us some background. You know, I'm looking at your Facebook page, and I looked over Debbie's a lot last night talking to her, but I'm looking at yours, and you studied human services, and you live in Baltimore, but you live in Hagerstown right now. How has this move impacted your life? I mean, you moved from a bustling city down here with us.
Right.
What kind of impact?
Well, it was kind of a life change that I had to make. I mismanaged some money, and I had to come live with some friends in the Hagerstown area. And then at the same time, I was always putting my resume out there as a recovery coach to see if I can get a position within the field. So Gloria Shoemaker with the Youth Advocacy Program, she invited me to an interview, and now I'm working in here in Martinsburg.
Yeah, so we yeah, but that's, and that's, I think that is one of the situations here, Debbie, for a lot of the advocates, because most of us are volunteers, and
yes,
and sometimes in the pool of volunteers, you know, you have to take what you can get, especially where it comes to transportation. How do you find that to be a challenge, Debbie?
That's a huge challenge, to be honest.
Yeah, it is.
Transportation, right?
You mean transportation for the individual seeking help or just in general?
Just in both.
Okay. Well, that definitely is a huge barrier. It's one of the barriers for recovery. And I believe how we can help is we need to, as agencies across the board, it needs to be at least one agency or two that can have recovery coaches available, or at least transportation available to help, you know, people in need. Like, for example, there are other programs that they do have vans to take people, you know, to meetings or to pick people up and take them back home and on different avenues. But as far as like a person seeking help, trying to get the treatment, or maybe they just need to get to a Social Security interview or a social services interview, you know, I think maybe a resource center could, if they staff recovery coaches there or staff people in recovery there, or even if they volunteer, I think we should have access to some transportation, because if we have funding for all the other stuff, I mean, the transportation can be a, it could help at least. It won't be a solution, a permanent one for the individual, you know, but it can definitely help them along the way. And, you know, to make a long story short, unfortunately, the individual will have to learn money management, get a job if they don't have one, save up their money, and at least go to an auction to get a car to get around on their own. But that's a long way away from the person who may need detox.
Yeah, detox is just the first step. So, Debbie, can you respond to that transportation piece?
Absolutely. So, just most of what I do, although I work in the industry, most of what I do with the incarcerated clients, I'm volunteering my time. And I do drive clients to Recovery Point. We've actually provided gas and hotel for somebody to drive a client to Charleston. I've driven multiple people when I can. I also, there's an organization called A Better Life Ministries, Steve Moen, who he's a minister. He does a lot of driving. He does way more than I think sometimes he can handle. He and his assistant Mike, they're associated with God One Ministries, but his organization is A Better Life Ministries, and he's been through addiction himself. So. What I have found is when I'm really having a hard time getting someone, because if you have Medicaid and a client is going to a Medicaid paid facility, it's very easy. MTM can be set up and they'll bring them home. But when you have them going to a grant funded facility, then they have to have transportation. And quite honestly, most individuals either don't have anybody that will help them anymore in their family, mm-hmm. because again, it is a family disease and maybe they've just had enough, or they really truly just don't have family maybe in the area, mm-hmm. Or any family left at all. So I reach out for volunteers quite a bit on Facebook when I need to, when I can't do the driving myself. Mm-hmm. But I think that we definitely need to have more resources for transportation, not just to treatment, but then when you're talking about the Oxford, mm-hmm. I know that they're looking at relocating the Oxford House in Charlestown because there isn't a lot of employment opportunities. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're going to keep it in Jefferson County. We need to have one, but there's people who don't have transportation from the Oxford to go to work. So,
Correct.
Yeah, we definitely need more volunteers and more organizations willing to come together and provide those services to keep the individual successful in their recovery.
So do you all find that in your work that the stakeholders are listening?
I think so.
Go ahead, Debbie.
I think it's been my experience when I've asked other groups that do transport, not Steve and his group, but other groups that are nonprofit or whatever it is that they're doing, if they can transport a client, I've been told that they only transport their own clients. And I think that that mentality needs to go away, mm-hmm. because if someone asks me if I can transport, I don't care whose client it is, who's helping them. It doesn't matter to
right.
me. My goal is to help that person. And
yeah.
that's what we need to come together. That's the obstacle I see. And the stakeholders, I think things are getting better,
mm-hmm.
in general. I mean, when my son started using back at age 18, I couldn't talk to anyone at all. I had nobody. And at least we can have open conversations now and not really, I mean, people are still judging us. Of course they are. But I think also at the same time that we've come so far that we can only just keep going way, way, way. There's so much room to make improvement if we can just collaborate efforts with
yeah.
all the various groups.
Yeah, you know, somebody in my shoes, I think that for me, it's every time I hear a good conversation about recovery, I mean, it makes me want to just salute, just shoot off fireworks. Because in my
yeah.
experience for many, many years, this was not a conversation that you had unless you were feeling
definitely
miserable. Not. Yeah. I mean, you had
yeah,
to hide it.
Wasn't.
You know, it kind of reminded me of Lord of the Rings. I often say this. You remember the little guy that got a hold to that little ring and he just went missing for all them years, and they found out he was down in the cave under the river or wherever he went, and he just kept going deeper and deeper into darkness. And so that
mm-hmm.
is what my experiences was with substance use disorder, they're calling it now, but when I was running wild, I was a junkie, you know, and that was it,
mm-hmm.
bottom line, you know,
right.
get that junkie,
yeah, that,
put him in jail. And so for me to even to have a platform like this, to be able to express myself in a way that I've never have, you know, I'm sort of like meeting me for the first time in a long, long time. So, you know, I take my hat
absolutely.
Off to any efforts, and I would like to join with each of you, you know, in this fight, because I've been here in Berkeley County for 15 years now, and, you know, it's getting better. It really is.
It is getting better, and I'm thankful that, you know, you can openly talk and share your story, and Donzel can share his story, and my son can share his story, because the transparency of it is what's going to save other people's lives.
Yeah,
this
bring
open
people.
Conversation
yeah.
is what And parents.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm on the opposite side. It's a heart-stopping feeling to know that your child is out there using substances and you're helpless. And especially when you didn't even have one family member you could talk to about it because they were so angry.
Yeah.
And did not understand.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. Yeah, fear. Fear is a horrible thing.
It really does, and I'm just grateful to God that it's come as far as what it has.
Yeah, and it's, and we have a long way to go, but we're moving one foot at a time. Okay, let's switch gears here for a minute. How do you all feel about MAT, medically assisted treatment? Now, you, Donzel, you can go first.
It's definitely on the individual basis. I would have to say I personally don't have any. Experience with it myself, but I know within the recovery community and my experience with recovery, I can say that it is definitely a necessity for some people. And as long as the individual, like one of our slogans, or I guess you could say mantras almost, is to thy own self be true. And if a person is using that and they're using it to subside the withdrawal symptoms and not using it as a substitute for the drug, then I think that person knows, you know, for themselves. I can't, you know, personally say, you know, how my struggle with it was, you know, but I do know it's definitely a lot of controversy in it within the community as well. And I just go back to the individual.
Right.
You know, it's definitely up to that person to either decide to do it or decide not to do it. And then when they're on it, you know, decide if they want to get off it. And of course, we got to work with, or they, the individual, has to work with the medication prescriber with the treatment of it and the regimen of it and all that kind of stuff. So, yes, if it's necessary for that individual person's treatment plan, yes. If you're using it for a substitute of the drug, then you're just getting high.
Yeah. And what are you, what's your experience with that, Debbie?
So when my son got clean, I was not a fan of MAT in any way, shape, or form, not Suboxone, not methadone, not anything. So I wasn't educated. And, you know, I was learning as I went. He was clean for 4 years. Before he had a relapse, the entire time he was on Suboxone, and I didn't even know. And he looked healthier than I'd ever seen him in his life. As a professional, I'm required to go to conferences, and I go to a big one in Atlanta every April or March or whenever it is. And both years that I've been, the NIH, Center for Disease and Control, DEA, like SAMHSA, all of the big players are there, and every single one of them are pro-MAT, and they explain why they are, and, you know, they don't have any particular favorite MAT. They just know that the brain has definitely been changed, and for some people, they need that security blanket, I guess you would call it, to keep, you know, living their life. There is neurofeedback that can help change the brain back to a healthy state, but for some people, they may be on MAT the rest of their life. We don't know the long-term effects of some of the Suboxone especially. We don't know. So from a professional standpoint, all I've heard is it's necessary. And what I do know is when you're in a Suboxone clinic or a Vivitrol, and I'm a big fan of Vivitrol, love the Vivitrol, I know that they have to continue counseling. So that's the good part of it. The bad part of it is what I see every day, is people selling their Suboxone to, you know, get the other stuff, or maybe they, you know, they just aren't taking anything, but they're still selling it. So there's a big controversy there, but what I do know from the conferences that I attend is that across the board, all of the big players are pro-MAT, and I see Renovo Center doing a fantastic job. Dr. Didden is giving Vivitrol injections at the health centers. The people that use it correctly, they can be successful. But if they misuse it, you know, that they have to take responsibility for
that's
that,
right.
quite honestly.
I agree 100%. Yeah, I work with Dr. Dave. So my next question, since you brought Dr. Dave up, how do you feel about the harm reduction programs that are being established?
I'm a fan of it. I do assessments with individuals every day, and the questions asked, you know, are you an IV user, number mm-hmm. one? And if mm-hmm. you are, do you have ABC or mm-hmm. AIDS or HIV? And almost routinely, the answer is a yes.
Mm-hmm.
I've had several times where people have been tested positive, and they've just gotten so lucky so far, thank God. But yeah, needle exchange. I mean, it took me until I guess last year to understand that your own needle mm-hmm. can give you Hep C. I didn't know that.
Yes, yes.
So yeah, I didn't know that, and that's what I'm saying. It's a progressive learning for me, and I think anybody doing this work, if you aren't someone who's actually been on the side of addiction, but I'm pro. I'm for the needle exchange personally. And I love what Dr. David Didden is doing.
Yep, Exchange Union. Yeah. So, how do you feel about the harm reduction, Donzel?
I was definitely for it as well. I was working with the Baltimore County Health Department doing needle exchange. And that's when I learned that there are a lot of other things going on besides, you know, addiction as well within that mm-hmm. community. So, you know, some of the stigma or the controversy behind a needle exchange type of program looks like we're condoning the use mm-hmm. of drugs. But unfortunately, besides a person continuing to use drugs, if they continue to use those same needles, they can pass on sexually transmitted diseases or some other type of disease that a person has by sharing the needle. So, just teaching someone to, you know, pull bleach inside of the needle and give it a good cleaning between every use is not enough.
Right.
You know, so one of those harm reduction programs like the needle exchange, I believe it helps because also the numbers are still going up. You know, there are people who are still contracting the HIV virus
mm-hmm.
and some people don't even know when I was doing HIV 101, they couldn't even tell me what the acronym was. These are people in their 30 years old.
Yeah.
So not only is the education not there, the disease is still being passed because of lack of knowledge, lack of resources. So I believe we as professionals as well should be trying to, I guess, prevent all diseases being spread. You know what I mean? Because they still exist. We haven't found a cure for all these diseases yet. That would be nice. You know, but if we could find a way to stop the spread of them, as opposed to just thinking that abstinence from a drug is going to be the solution, then I think we have to start there.
Yeah.
You know, and then also what that does, too, for the person that is using, it gives them a break. And it gives them an actual moment of clarity. Because if they've taken this kind of step to do something to prevent the spread of the disease,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Then maybe they can think about actually not even using it at all.
That's
you know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes we have to just give an opportunity for us to do an intervention. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, you know, needle exchanges could be places or little moments to either pass a card or to have a brief conversation about recovery
mm-hmm.
or something else to at least be a deterrent for mm-hmm. other people to eventually stop using as well as, you know, to prevent the spread of disease.
Yeah. One last word from you, Debbie. Go ahead. We got a couple of minutes and then we're going to wrap it up. It's been such a wonderful, wonderful morning here on Recovery Radio. Go ahead, Debbie.
Okay. I love what you say, Donzel, about the fact that the harm reduction, the needle exchange gives people an opportunity to actually have a moment of clarity thinking about the fact that, hey, yes, do I want to continue doing this? Because I didn't, I haven't even thought about that myself, but of course it would. And it gives them, you know, some education that maybe they don't know. I mean, maybe they don't know that what their own needle can cause that. But also I do know that the rate of medication, I mean, the treatment for hepatitis is so expensive that it's hard to get treatment for too. So, I mean, if we're offering those types of things, I don't feel like we're encouraging use. I echo what you said. We're giving them some education and a moment of clarity that maybe that'll be the point that they say, okay, it's time I stop.
Mm-hmm.
So excellent statement. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, and it happens. Yes, we do recover. Listen, I want to thank both of you guys for coming on this morning, spending some time with me this morning here on Recovery Radio down in beautiful Bolivar, West Virginia. We thank you so much. I want to formally invite you to our Back to School party August the 11th, 2018 at 11 a.m. in Jefferson Memorial Park. That's 400 Forest Avenue in Charlestown. There'll be a cookout, free swimming, basketball tournament, school supply giveaway. And also Recovery Radio will be live at this event. And Recovery Radio will be showcasing an award-winning Jump Kids Double Dutch team. And so you can join us, and if you'd like to support, just come on out and check in with me. I've just gotten the okay from my engineer, and we're going to be there on August the 11th, so won't you guys consider joining us. Debbie, before I let you go, can you text me your boss's phone number once again?
Absolutely.
After we get off the line.
I will be at the event.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. We'll be there.
I'd
like to get Debbie's information as well.
Okay, go ahead, Debbie. Give it out over the... You got your pen ready there?
Sure. My number is free for anybody that wants it. It's 304-820-5375, and that's direct.
820-5375.
That's correct. And if you could text me your number, that would be great.
Okay, I definitely will.
All right, it's been nice meeting you.
All right.
Thanks,
you're welcome. Just text me that number, and we're gonna close out with a little bit of Marvin Gaye. I didn't get him in there, but we're gonna close out with Marvin Gaye, What's Going On. And you know, I'm so excited because this format is just a place where, I mean, just amazing things are happening. I'm meeting amazing people such as you two guys, and I look forward to working with you. I always believe Denzel and Debbie, boots on the ground. That's my thing.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Talk to you all soon.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
And God bless both of you.
God bless you.
Your inspiration.
Thanks, Debbie. Talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, James.
Appreciate You're welcome, Denzel. All right.
Donzel,
that's right.
Thank you.
War is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and get here today. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.